Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Learning Curve with me, Kenny. Today's podcast, we'll be looking at the topic of change management. And having myself been involved in a couple implementation projects, as well as witnessing, internal corporate changes here in our company, I'm very much looking forward to interviewing an absolute expert in the field. So welcome to the podcast, Gunnar, founder and director of the True 11, based in Singapore. Hello, Gunnar.
Well, hi, Kenny. Thanks for having me. Pleasure.
Thank you for being on and taking the time. Since we do have a little bit of a time difference here going on, it's now 1 o'clock here. And for you, it's what, six, I believe?
Oh, seven. 7 p.m.
Seven. Yeah. Okay. So you're almost burning the midnight candle here to go on this podcast with me. Okay. So Gunnar, to start off our talk today, our podcast, give our listeners a little insight on your journey in the field of change management and your role at True 11.
Sure. Happy to do so. So I've been involved in the field of change management for a long time. I would say roughly about the last 20 years, I would say. Even back then, I would say we didn't really call it that way, but I have been a project manager for a long time in the field of human resources. That was the beginning of my career and my journey. And while we were implementing new human resources strategies, new human resources operating models, we kind of always had to deal with a way of implementing it so that people could actually follow. And I think those were my first experience in the area of change management. And further down the road of my career, I at some point decided to step out of the corporate world and move into the area of consulting, training, coaching. And that's where I really became, an expert in the area of change management, change leadership, took on various different roles for leading consulting practices in the area of change for various different big players. And now since for a couple of years now, I'm running True 11 on and off, sometimes being involved in full-time projects, sometimes focusing more on the business. And here we focus on the area of change and educating and supporting companies and leaders in the field.
Okay, so two questions that come to my mind right off the tap. True 11, how can you give me a little history on the name? Because I was trying to figure out what relevance, is there like a special key, like the number of the universe being 42, is 11 the magic number for change management, or how did True 11 come about?
It's not. Yeah, well, good question. It's not really a magic number for anybody, although it's considered one of the important numbers in numerology. But I'm not like a big believer of that. It's more that it's my lucky number. So I've been born on the 11th, 9/11 to be exact, which is it's an interesting date in itself. But I always saw it as it's also the birthday of Franz Beckenbauer, one of the biggest football players of all times. And as a big football fan, I also thought of what is a great team? A great team is 11 players, right? So I had these different associations with the number 11, and I had to come up with a name quickly at some point. So I decided, so what is it? I'm not a true 10, right? So we all know true 10 is a different thing. So I said, okay, it's a true 11, right? So it's a great team, it's a great number, it's true and something real. So that's how I came about came up with a name.
Fantastic. So to our listeners out there, if you haven't figured out by yet, Gunnar has distinctly German roots. They're by the reference to soccer. And you would call it football. I call it soccer. I'm American. So, and of course, the reference to Franz Beckenbauer. Okay. So second question that came up while looking through your site, your profile. On your site, it says boutique partner. please. I like new terms. So what I was looking, I'm like, okay, where'd he come up with True 11? That makes sense. Now I got that one. But then I was looking at boutique partner. I'm like, boutique partner? What's a boutique partner? So please give me some insight on what boutique partner means.
Well, first of all, boutique really meaning that we are not like, let's say, the big warehouse, right? So we're not like the big four out there who offer everything. We are more like the small boutique. We're very small. At the moment, it's me plus a few partners I work on and off with. And we tend to see ourselves as partners to our clients. So trying to build long-term relationships. We have a few companies that we've, or a few clients that we've worked couple of times with already. So that is the goal, right? So the goal is to really be, partner very closely with our clients rather than being just a service provider like an off-the-shelf kind of offer services off the shelf. It's more like really partnering, really understanding what the client is all about to then come up with some boutique solutions, right? So
okay. Really, okay. I like really that. Okay, so yeah. That now it hit, now it strikes. So it's a selection of well curated small selection of unique and individual things, so to say.
Exactly, and if there are some special requirements, we would try and make them happen. Right, so that's also, I think, is probably a characteristic of a boutique. Right, so if you need something specific, we would try and cater to that as well.
Okay, fantastic. That now it all becomes a full, you know, how should I say, a full image of your company and how you work. So
thanks for asking the questions. I really never thought about that so much in detail, but now it becomes much clearer to me too.
It's just something that struck out to me because I'm like, no, True 11, and like I said, I couldn't make what exactly, you know. I was always trying to, you know, relate it to change management, of course, so I couldn't, you know, get behind it, but I love the story behind it. And that's the cool thing, you know, the story behind an idea. And in this case, that was a fantastic story. And then, like I said, I was looking at the other things and, okay, you know, you have all the regular stuff on change management and so forth, but I'm like, boutique partner, what's that? And I couldn't think of, in my mind, at least, I couldn't come up with an image that got behind that. But like I said, your explanation, fantastic. So really like that. All right, so let's get to the meat of the discussion, actually, which is change management. So for those in our audience who may not be familiar with the concept, could you explain what change management is and why it is crucial for a business to understand and implement?
Yeah, well, as I already briefly mentioned at the beginning in my intro, change management, in my view, is a very crucial part for any kind of larger project, for any kind of larger initiative out there. It usually runs in parallel to, let's say, the more technical part of a project, where it's more about delivering a solution, delivering a new organizational structure, or delivering a merger and acquisition, for example. The change management part is safeguarding the outcomes, right? So whenever you embark on a project, you have typically, wherever it starts, you know, whether it's a strategic project that you start because you want to bring the organization to a different into a different field, or you want to do something that is for safeguarding the future, or if it's something that is, for example, regulatory driven, where you don't have a choice and you need to embark on something, you always have a certain objective in mind that you want to achieve with a project. And many times it's down to people doing things differently later on. Right, so they have to work with new processes. They have to work with the new ERP system that you have just implemented. They have to work with a new boss that they now have because you have changed the organizational structure. So it comes down to people. And what the change management does is it takes the people on a journey and tries to facilitate the whole process and the whole journey in a way that at the end of the day, the organization or the project achieves the outcomes, right? So achieves the higher returns, achieves the collaboration that they're looking for, and achieves the numbers that they try to achieve. That is what the change management does. And there are a lot of different tools and techniques and ways of doing it, depending on the specific initiative that's going on, right? So the magnitude, how many people are involved, kind of change that's happening. And we can't shy away from it. There's change everywhere around us, so constantly. I think we all know that. Organizations have no choice anymore. They need to change and adapt and develop constantly to stay relevant. And doing proper change management. Yeah.
And I have to say, I find one thing that I wasn't prepared for in your answer was that you responded that change management is there to safeguard the outcome. I thought that was a really interesting, I've never looked at it that way. I think that's a very interesting perspective, but I can get behind that. And I would say sometimes, and you can probably speak to that more at length, I would say sometimes change management can be somewhat neglected. Although you say it's critical, essential, it's, I believe, and you would probably subscribe to that, sometimes neglected for one or the other reason. So in your view, what are the fundamental principles or key elements of an effective change management?
Well, change management, as I said, I mean, it's there for safeguarding the outcomes, right? So first of all, to be effective in change management, you need to know what the desired outcomes are. So very often, it starts with some sort of, could be some sort of vision by the management or by the leader, right? So it could be something, but could be some technical thing that needs to happen in order to fulfill certain requirements. So you need to know what the desired outcomes are. You need to try to make them somehow tangible, right? So in an ideal state, you would make them measurable so that at the end of the day, you could see and measure to what extent you have achieved the outcome. So that's one aspect. Other than that, many people always see one of the main aspects of change management is good communication. But what does good communication mean, or why is it so crucial? In order to get people along and take them along the journey, it's very important that they at all times kind of understand and know what's happening and what's coming, right? So it's a lot around being very transparent about why the change is happening, what exactly is happening, what is happening to them specifically, because a lot of change resistance that is sometimes happening is due to the fact that people are not really clear about what is happening to them, what does the change mean to them personally. So being very transparent and keeping that transparency and communication both ways, also listening to feedback from the ground and being open to feedback and criticism and listening to fears and concerns of employees is super important throughout the whole project, down to a point where sometimes strategies might have to change or approaches might have to change. Be open to that. I think it's fundamentally really about involving the people early on, engaging them, making them part of the journey rather than giving them the feeling that they're just looking from the outside and the project team is doing something and we get like a monthly update, really keeping them involved. And of course, the bigger the change and the more people are affected, the more these elements are important.
You wrapped it up there very nicely, because the three things that I had now, or I believe it was two at least that I had now from the conversation, was one, a clear direction or clear knowledge of the outcome. So you know what you're working towards, then transparent and clear communication, and then you know, bringing the people along on that journey. So I think that's really, really good. Let's take a look at if we apply that now, those three things that you said, can you share an example of a successful change management initiative that you were involved with, and some highlights of the strategies or techniques that you contributed to the success? Or second option, or you can describe the same story in, well, this wouldn't be too good, but I'll put it out there anyways, in terms of a failure. Because oftentimes, if everything works, I find that the learn factor isn't as high when you're successful at something as when you fail at something. Because with a failure, I think you learn more. So I'll leave it up to you in that case to answer
the question. Well, the good thing is that it doesn't have to be either or, right? So typically, if you go through a large transformation or a long kind of change, you experience probably both, right? So you experience some success, hopefully, at the end of the day. But throughout the journey, you have a lot of situations which are probably could be seen as an intermediate, like failure.
Let's call them setbacks. How about that?
Yeah, setbacks, exactly. So you do have that. And that's also one of the aspects, right? So when we talk about the outcome that I mentioned earlier, even the outcome the desired outcome might change, right? So we learn constantly. We learn constantly from the feedback. It's all about agility and being able to tag and not being stuck with what we originally hope to achieve or hope to deliver. Be open and doing doing things in an agile way. So, giving an example, pretty early in my career, and I mentioned it briefly before, when we implemented for Deutsche Bank back then, my employer, we were amongst the first in Germany who really, on a large scale, transformed the HR organization into part of the organization, of the HR organization, into a shared services model. So a lot of the repetitive, more process-driven operations work was put into a shared services organization. And back then, I think the HR team, the leadership team, did a pretty good job in managing the change. So they were very early on with explaining why the change had to happen. There were certain aspects, the senior leadership of the bank was requiring from their HR services, where they said, okay, we can only deliver this through a shared services organization. They were very good at creating this urgency and the reason why. But then when it came to implementation, of course, there was a lot of resistance. So my job back then was I was part of setting up the first part of the shared services, which was a contact center. And the contact center was implemented in Berlin, far away from Frankfurt, where the headquarters are. And we created something, and there was a lot of skepticism on the side of the rest of the HR organization. So they were all like, okay, I don't think some call center can do the work that we do here on the ground with our clients, with our internal clients as HR advisors every day. They wanted to see us fail, basically. That was the feeling we always had, which created a bit of a mentality at our end where we said, no, we're going to show them that we can do it. So what we did what we found out relatively quickly was that one of the reasons for the resistance was a kind of a fear, right? So HR advisors were very happy with the kind of job they were doing, which 50% of the time was answering relatively similar, simple questions to people who would call them, ask them about their holiday entitlement or salary questions. And they were happy with that. They go home at the end of the day and are happy, and they're, well, I helped 10 people. Now that was taken away from them, and it created a certain resistance because they said, okay, what am I going to do? So the idea was for them to step up and do more strategic work. And we hear that now all the time when big transformations happening. Yeah, AI is coming in. Okay, yeah, but that will free up capacities for others to do for more strategic, more higher level work. As a matter of fact, a lot of people don't really want that because they don't know how to do it. And so what we did back then, when we realized that that is one of the reasons, we did two things. One was we invited people over to our center in Berlin, showed them around, showed them how we were working and how good the services were that we were delivering. We were measuring customer satisfaction. We were measuring our numbers rigorously to showcase how much value we were adding. And at the same time, there was a program being developed to help those HR advisors to get ready. And that was the change management, really, and that's where L&D comes in as well, right? So where they said, okay, we want you to do more strategic work. So how can we help you actually do that, step up and do that? What do you need to learn? What do you need to learn in how you work with your customers differently now? So those were a few strategies that were started back then that ultimately helped a lot of people to appreciate the new model. And it was successful. It was later on then rolled out globally. It became a global organization. We had a global center in Berlin then, and it was a great success story. At the same time, there are always people who are still not happy, right? And that's change is everywhere, and you will always find people who might not be the right fit for the new organization or the new ways of doing things. But you might find that out if you give them the opportunity to be part of it and offer it to them, involve them early, take their concerns seriously and educate them so that they
can. But isn't that then, when listening, aren't you describing like a gap to us in a certain case? Because when you described your story, I imagine that there was a vision in the beginning where you want to go to. So in your case, you said it was implementing, what was it again? Shared services. Right? And then you have a desired outcome. But from the story you just explained, you were kind of like a little detective. You went along and you found out, okay, this is not, why is this not working? And then I'm not sure, but in your explanation, did those individuals, so those people in leadership positions, did they ever think about the impact? So taking away somebody's ability to or taking part of his job and replacing it with a strategic part, was that part of their equation, or is that something that you found out and enabled that along in the journey?
I think it was a little bit of both. So back then, my role was not necessarily 100% being a change manager. My role was more making the contact center work, right? So I was kind of a COO of the contact center, so to speak. So I was responsible for measuring everything and all that, and inviting people over. Later on, then I became a quality manager for that center, which then also gave me a lot of insights into how people perceived the services. And I think to your question, senior management was kind of aware. I mean, Deutsche Bank is a, back then, I left them more than 10 years ago and can't speak for today, but back then they were a very people-oriented and employee-oriented organization. So it wasn't a light-hearted kind of thing where they said, okay, we just change this and you get on with it and you will, you'll be fine. It wasn't like, so they were very considerate about what might happen to the people who really have to have a very different job going forward, right? But they offered them all the support. That's important. So they were very upfront with regards to offering the support and telling them, look, this is what's going to happen. This is how we want you to work differently in the future. That's also very important. So people need to be able to picture the future and need to understand, what does it mean for me? So what am I really going to do or I expected to do differently in the future? And then they can get mentally prepared, and then you need to help them get really prepared, right? So build the skills and get the coaching and get the mentoring so that they can be successful. And but of course, throughout the journey, there were more and more things coming up, and a lot of sometimes there's then resistance from angles that you did not expect in the first place, and then they pop up, and then you need to deal with them. Yeah.
Well, if you can, let's boil it down to like an essence again, I don't know, is that let me say quintessence, or is that in German word? We'll go with it. Down to the essence. So let's boil it down to the essence. So what have you found are some familiar challenges organizations encounter when attempting to implement change management strategies? So like, what would be your top three?
Top three? Wow.
Well, I would say more or less, then you're welcome to...
So typically... And I think you mentioned it before already. One is clearly that change management is often not seen as the top priority, right? So it's not. So if you're a change manager or you have been assigned by a big, I don't know, by your leadership to be the manage the change of as part of a large transformation or so. Can be quite frustrating at times to get people's attention, get people's time, and get resources to actually do what you think is necessary to facilitate the change smoothly, right? So that's number one. Number two, I think it's of course that you will always face resistance at some point, right? So you there will always be people who are not happy with the solution, with the way forward, who have a different opinion. So this is absolutely common, and you won't see any, even if it's a smaller change, even if it's, I don't know, I once had a situation where we had to deal with just moving a group of people or a team from one corner of the open space office to the other. It was harder than implementing a new ERP system, I would say.
Wow.
The amount of resistance that was there and the arguments that came up from, I don't know, the aircon is blowing there and the light is coming here. And it's very, very tough sometimes. So you will always have to deal with resistance and you need to find ways to do that. And the third one is probably to keep the momentum throughout the whole journey, right? So it's not done with a lot of times. People think, okay, we do a good communication at the beginning, and we come up with a clear message, and we do a big town hall meeting, and the most senior leader of whatever the organization that is changing will stand there and talk about it, which is great. It's a good starting point, but it's not sufficient, right? So it's not enough. So you need to create a stamina, and you need to create initiatives and keep doing the work throughout the whole program. You need to celebrate successes in between. You need to acknowledge people for changing their behavior. You need to make sure that certain decisions are being made that are necessary. So I think those are the biggest three, because sometimes, in particular with long change initiatives that are driven from inside the organization, so that are more like aspirational, not so much like regulatory, and I don't know, the regulator is at the back of us and we need to do something, then usually things are being pulled through. But if it's something where we say, oh, we want to create a great culture, or we want to do something more aspirational that we believe is the right thing, keeping it up and really following through is the challenge, which is the same with project management, but change management.
Since you mentioned project management, it's a perfect segue to another question I was going to pose. I'm going to put a little twist on this. So this is where it gets a little off the script. In my experience as a project manager, it's been that oftentimes people were given the role of a project manager without the toolkit. So yes, of course, there are some things you can learn through experience, but I would say it can oftentimes be easier if you have a certain toolkit to work on. Now, for project managers, there's, you know, all kinds of certifications that you can go out there. What about for change managers? Would you also say that sometimes people are thrust into that role without having the proper toolkit to perform that activity? Like I said, looking at your website, for example, I found, you know, a couple interesting things that I would prescribe that you use as a toolkit. There was the ADCAR model, and then the ONA. Okay, these are probably just, you know, terms that you use on a regular basis in that. But how would you? What is your opinion of that? Is there still potential for organizations maybe to upskill those individuals that they select for change management?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, it starts with the selection of the change manager, right? So you you want to make sure that you, first of all, select somebody or assign somebody who is really willing to do this, right? So who's really not being selected because he's the one on the bench at the moment, or you know, doesn't have anything better to do. It's not good advice to do that, right? You want people in a change management role who really want to get things done and changed. Otherwise, it's going to be tricky, right? So, and then of course, I mean, I think the mindset is the first thing. So you need to have somebody who understands that. Yes, we need to change, and I want to support this change, and I want to do whatever I can to make it happen. But it's not enough, right? So you need certain tools and techniques as well, or at least they will make your life much, much easier and probably make you more effective as a change manager as such. And yes, I mean, upskilling people who are willing to do this role is certainly always something I would encourage. And it doesn't necessarily have to be... So I recently got asked, you know, what is the model you would always prescribe, or what is it that you always use? And I would always say, start with something. And there's something like ProSize ADCAR model, for example, is a very popular one. It's probably the most popular one out there. There are others as well. But over time, if you're really interested in the topic, I think it's more important to create like an M-shape kind of profile, right? So where you not only know about one, it's like the nail, and if you only have a hammer, everything looks like a nail or something. No, you want to broaden your scope as well, or your knowledge. So use others, or learn broadly about change and change management, so that you can then mix and match, always depending on the situation, because not every situation can be solved with one single framework or one single technique. There's a good starting point, ADCAR, but it's probably not everything. But you need to educate not only the ones who are...
Since we're educating, just maybe ADCAR, for my, is a model. It's an acronym, and it stands for Awareness, Desire, Knowledge, Ability, and Reinforcement. But I don't know the application of it. So maybe just a little excerpt on the application.
I can, So it's very, all change management models or processes that I know of, they kind of follow a similar sequence, because this is how change works, right? So in ADCAR, has been very specifically developed by this company, ProSci, specifically developed for leading individuals through a change and a change process. And it's a sequence of five steps and or five levels, so to speak, where you need to achieve a certain level on each of the steps before you actually can move to the next one. And what it stands for is awareness in the first place. So are you aware of the change that's happening and why it's happening? Do you understand that, right? So are you clear about this? That's the first A. Then you have the D, which stands for desire, right? So are you willing to be part of this? Do you think it's a good thing? And do you understand, yes, it needs to happen and I want to be, I'm in? That's the desire part. And the next is the K, which is then the knowledge, stands for knowledge. Do you have the knowledge, the skills to be part of this change and to be successful in this change? So it could be something like what I discussed earlier. If I'm an HR advisor and everything changes around me, do I have the knowledge of how to be a strategic advisor to my to the managers I look after, right? So what skills? Do I have the knowledge to be part and do I have the knowledge to change? The next A is then the ability, which is then more about, is everything around me, am I enabled to be part of this change, right? So are there systems in place? Are the processes, have they been rolled out? Is the whole environment ready for the change so that I can actually apply my knowledge can be part of the change successfully? And the last one then, the R, is the reinforcement, where it's more than about how do we make sure that we do not move back to, into old ways of doing things. It's more about, what are some of the practices we can do? Am I being rewarded for having changed my behavior? Has my incentive system changed? Things like that. So this is where we say, okay, and we need to, the model behind it is like, actually change happens in an organization one person at a time. So every single person, theoretically, we need to move through these five steps, right? Wow. So in order to create organizational change. And so we need to understand where each of them is, right? So not everybody's at the same stage. So everybody needs a slightly different treatment maybe, or a slightly different level of support or help at different stages.
So just to bring it back, so actually when I said, so that's basically if we had a change manager that wasn't that qualified or whatever, this is precisely then the gap that where you come in with your knowledge, with your tool set, and are able to with True 11 to support organizations in this change by using those tools, such as a Dakar tool set or study or
Adkar
modeling. Okay. Yeah. So that's where you come in then, and you would apply those models out of one of the many tools that you have to help an organization go through that change, right?
It's one of the things we do. It's one of the ways we support. I actually have in one of my keynotes that I gave recently, I started with a statement where I said, training individual project managers, change managers, or middle managers in change management, like the Adkar model, is actually a waste of time and resources. Ooh. Unless
discussion took a sudden change.
Yeah, yeah. Unless you actually also get the leaders to play their critical role in change and transformation. So you can have very well educated change managers who know all the tools, who know all the processes, and know the steps. And if the leaders don't play their role in making things happen, it can become, or it will become, a very frustrating experience for those people, right?
Okay, then let's dive into that. What is your experience there? What is the importance of, so we have now a successful change manager, or we have you in place helping a company along. How is then the leadership? Where does leadership come as you addressed it, because it was a key factor?
Yeah, I mean, leadership always needs to be part of it, right? So the bigger the change is, the more crucial it is, and the more people are involved, the more higher up we need to get in terms of who needs to get involved and who needs to support this. I mean, it starts all, so in all phases of a project or of a change initiative, leaders have to play a certain role. I mean, we mentioned at the beginning, we start with a vision, right? So with objectives, they need to show the way, right? So they need to tell us, okay, this is where the company is going. This is where we want to be in a couple of years' time. And that's why we need to do certain things, right? So that's so they can either top down say, okay, this is the change we're now going to implement. This is a new structure we're going to do. This is a merger and acquisition we're going to start. So that's the company we're going to buy. You know, all kinds of different initiatives could be done top down. But they could also encourage and say, look, this is our vision. Here is where we want to be. I encourage everybody to contribute and tell us what we need to do, or what you need to do in your area, in HR, in finance, in sales. What can you do now to contribute to that vision, and what changes do we need to start doing? So they need to create this this whole starting point, right? So the second very, very crucial thing that I believe and I've seen over and over again need to do, or what leaders need to do, is they need to make sure that things are kept kind of under control in a way that the organization doesn't get overwhelmed by too much happening at the same time. So one of the biggest frustrations when I talk to middle managers or teams, when we run team workshops, things like that, is usually, okay, there's so much going on, we don't have time to do this, or we don't have time to focus on that, right? So we would love to go on training, we would love to spend more time on change management or listening to people, but we simply do not have time because it's just too much happening.
Okay, so it's always this discussion between operative needs and basically training and education needs. That's
everything. Discussion, yeah, it's day-to-day work, so business as usual, as many people say, and the things on top, right? So how do you manage that? And one of the biggest challenges to change, successful change, is what is also called change fatigue, right? So the organization is fatigued by all the stuff that's happening. And we have just completed a big IT rollout, and now immediately the next big thing is happening. We are still exhausted from the earlier project. So how, you know, it's just too much. Can we just get a breather? So as a manager, you need, as a leader, you do not have to be on top of everything, of every single initiative, but you need to demand, or you need to create some sort of structure that enables the organization to manage that, right? So have a structure to clearly define, or have clear rules and ideas around how to pick the right initiatives, right? So what needs to be true in order to embark on the next change? You know, ask somebody who comes up with an idea about those parameters, right? So they can pitch it to you, but okay, is it, how, what's the impact on our overall, the positive impact on our overall vision? How much is it going to cost? How many people need to be involved? How long does it take? All these things will take, will have to take some sort of role in making these decisions. And apply the same to get buy-in, apply the same rules to your own initiatives, right? So create some sort of change language so that people understand, if we fulfill certain parameters, yes, our change initiatives might be worthwhile to follow through. And have some sort of portfolio management, have a transformation office that looks after all the whole portfolio, knows what's going on, to make sure it's managed and people are not getting overwhelmed, or the organization doesn't get overwhelmed.
Okay. Okay, so we've talked about change management. We talked about some of the challenges within change management. We've also talked about now leadership in change management. The last aspect that I'd like to get to is then the aspect of how organizations can leverage learning and development initiatives and training programs to facilitate the process of change management. How do you see that?
Well, I think we kind of touched on that already a little bit. So learning and development is a crucial part, I would say, in two major different blocks. The first block is change management education, right? So it's about helping the organization become more or become better at change management, understanding what kind of capabilities are already there, what kind of capabilities do we need for the magnitude and the amount of change that's happening over the next periods, and then create a strategy to build the capabilities around it. Because I think every organization these days, everybody needs this, right? So have something in place for let's say the broad organization, so everybody should understand at least the bare minimum around how people change, right? So and why change management is important. Then have something for those who hopefully volunteer or want to be more deeply involved in change initiatives. Typical candidates have project managers involved, have some of the middle managers involved, and give them some sort of more detailed change management education. And then last but not least, of course, the leaders, teach them about what their role is. Let them know how crucial the role is. I mean, I've rolled out my own kind of change leadership framework. And I know it's the same thing, right? So they always are.
Please touch on that. So that's, I mean.
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
I will, but it's the reason why I built it is because I was so frustrated about this whole situation where a lot of people tell me, I don't think my leaders understand what their role is. They're not making the decisions we need. They're not giving us the time and resources we need. And
well, that's something we addressed a little bit, right? When I said there was a gap that oftentimes, you know, people are designated with the role of change manager without the necessary tool set. And I think that is where you come in with what you're saying now.
It's the same. It's the same for the leaders. They sometimes don't understand what is required. So I've created something that is as simple as possible so that they can pick it up. It's based on a little bit like a Pareto principle, right? So 80-20, what do I need to do? What are the few things that I need to do as a leader to be effective and help my organization to really change and help to not get people frustrated with change and overwhelmed. And I call it the four chords of change leadership, which is based on, four chords. There are four chords that you can play in pop music that actually gets you to play hundreds of pop songs. And so I've used that analogy to create four areas where I think leaders need to be very, very present and strong in order to support the organization as much as they can. There's always more that they can learn, but those are the foundational things. So, and it covers basically all four stages of a change initiative.
Would you care to briefly outline what those four areas are?
Yeah. So I think I've touched it already a little bit. Is first of all, they need to structure the whole ideation and initiation process. So there needs to be a clear and transparent way of how we pick and decide on what initiatives we're going to embark on. And that includes also the vision and giving some desired outcomes. They need to be involved in the planning process. So they need to be ready to assign the right resources, not the ones who are just on the bench, but try to free up the best people for the most crucial change initiatives and get them on board and provide the budget, discuss the outcomes and how to measure them and all that. And then they need to be on board throughout the implementation as visible supporters, walk the talk, be there, be present, talk about the change, supported, make decisions if they are required. If we get into a situation where we feel like it's fading out and we're losing steam, be there to reignite and support from the top, really, as much as possible. And then last but not least, with the reinforcement, right? So how do you make sure that things stick? It's a lot around making decisions on changing systems for the long term, like incentive systems, for example. How do I incentivize people going forward? How do I keep learning and continuous improvement going? So those kinds of decisions. And the way we educate it is really for each of these four parts, we have very clear kind of tools and techniques that can be used by every leader. And that's what we're about to roll out now and in the process.
Well, it's exciting. It sounds exactly what we need because it covers, you know, it attacked one of the topics that we discussed, and that was basically that, you know, oftentimes leaders need to also be enabled, engaged, and possible to fill the role. I mean, some people do say there's a born leader, but, you know, I would say there's also a learned leader. You know, I mean, there's a born leader and there's a learned leader. And I would definitely consider change management to one of those skills that you would need to learn or through, such as you did it through a long, you know, track of experience and learning and bring, you know, adding up to a toolkit of 20 years. But I'm sure that sometimes people will need somebody a little bit quicker than that.
So, true. And it starts with the right mindset, right? So you need to have the leaders need to have the mindset and of really understanding change is not something you just demand or, you just do it top down and then everybody will follow. I think really being willing to accept that there is a certain way humans need to be guided through change, and there are certain things that as a leader we need to do and to enable that is a good starting point, and then learn about it, obviously. And everybody understands that leaders are under a lot of pressure around short-term objectives. They need to meet their quarterly goals, and that's always top of their mind. And very often, that's all they care about. And that's why very often sometimes change management is a little bit neglected. And as soon as a project is implemented and the keys have been handed over to speak, they're happy, right? Tick in the box, we're done. Yeah. We can showcase that to our stakeholders. And what we often forget then is what happens afterwards? So how do we really reap the benefits of the investment and make sure that a new solution, a new process, a new organization works as effectively as anticipated in the first place.
Okay, so that kind of brings us full circle now. It brings us back to the opening statement you made, is that change management helps to ensure the outcomes. And I think that's, once again, it has a little bit of a parallel from my experience in project management, that if you invest a little bit in the beginning, then you're assured that the outcome will be that which you want. So Gunnar, thanks a lot for sharing your valuable insights and expertise on change management and its implications, you know, for leadership or on leadership, and of course also the learning and development department, in the sense that, you know, training should be made available not only for leaders but also for the individuals that are actually going to do the change. In the final word, what final advice or key takeaways would you leave our audience with? Is there, once again, we'll break it down to threes, numerology. Do you have three bullet points that you would say?
Wow. Okay. I wanted to create a sentence, but okay. Let me see.
Well, okay. I'm flexible. So
now I think it's really, it comes down to, don't overthink it, right? So don't overthink this. Don't be scared. Just, dare to start, right? So also dare to ask for change management, or for if a change is happening in your organization, ask the question, right? So so how are we managing this? How are we keeping the people on board and take them on the ride, right? So that's I would always do that. Then go out there and just start with some basic education around it. Watch some, there are tons of materials out there you can start watching and just familiarize yourself with that. And then maybe if there's the next change happening in your organization, volunteer and say, look, I'd be happy to try. I know I don't know all the techniques and everything, but I'd be happy to try and make it a little bit of a better experience for everybody. So that's something I would just encourage everybody to do, because if it's not yet a practice that is being lived in your organization, it's also a good opportunity to be an early adopter and create a profile for yourself, right? So be someone who's out there and ready to change, innovative, and I think that's a great opportunity to stand out and have a real impact on a pretty good level, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Gunnar, for our next podcast, do you have a guest that you could recommend or a topic that we should explore in the next podcast?
Sure, I've got someone who might be interesting for you as well. He's an absolute expert in the field of sustainability and in the context of human resources. So he does a lot of work around sustainable human resources and is working on some educational content around that as well. And he's also an expert in Industry 4.0. So it's something you might want to consider. His name is Eckhard Jensen. He's also based here in Singapore and is someone I work very closely with every now and then.
Okay. So I think Gunnar is, like I said, he told me at the beginning of the podcast, he was kind of the evangelist of change management. I think you've definitely portrayed that role very well. And I think with the last statement that you made, it might even encourage some future change managers to become that. Gunnar, thanks again. Final statement is also, if they don't, then they can always call you, because you are you have the necessary expertise, so you can jump in there and assist on that topic. So once again, thanks for being part of the podcast. If you're intrigued by what Gunnar had to say, then please don't hesitate in contact him at true11.com. If you like the podcast, smash the like button, or even better, the subscribe button. Thanks for listening in. Till next time, this was The Learning Curve with me, Kenny.